We're on page 136 in the Kuzari. Page 136. And we were talking about the status of converts according to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi takes a controversial position on the status of converts. And he says that if a person converts to Judaism, then that person is a part of the Jewish people, unquestionably so, but they do not share a certain unique quality that is specific to people who were born as Jews, and that is they do not have the ability to achieve prophecy. This is an extremely controversial opinion, and it is something that has caused certain people to be critical of this particular world view within Judaism, and we've discussed this before. And we also pointed out that although this appears to be somewhat of a racist doctrine, the Rambam does not share the same opinion. We talked about his epistle, his Igeris Taimon, where he says that all human beings, by virtue of the fact that they're created in the image of God, are capable of achieving prophecy. And he cites as his proof the characters from the book of Job, who were all Gentiles, and yet both Eov and his friends who tried to comfort him offered prophetic words. So we see that non-Jews are capable of prophecy. How Rabbi Yehuda Halevi will answer this challenge from the Rambam, we don't know. We also don't know whether the Rambam was responding to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi when he wrote this. Whether it stands to reason, there's a lot of evidence, anecdotal evidence, to support the fact that the Rambam was aware of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Kuzari. However, at the same time, he never addresses it head-on to say that he disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, but it stands to reason that this was written as a way of expressing his difference of opinion. In general, we've expressed that there's a dichotomy in the philosophies of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Rambam, and that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi takes a much more objectified view of concretized hierarchical differences within the physical components of our world, which is why he sees very concrete differences between Jew and Gentile, why he sees very concretized differences between inside Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, and other differences as well, which we will underscore as we go through the book. The Rambam takes a softer view of the differentiations that exist between Jew and non-Jew, and between within Eretz Yisrael, outside of Eretz Yisrael, and other differentiations. Now's not the time for us to go over a more sweeping attitudinal examination of the differences between the Rambam and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, but it is important to realize that the more mystical one has one's view is of the world of the physical realm, when I say the word mystical, I mean to say that there is a certain convergence between the physical and the metaphysical realm, and that there is a greater sense of combination or of some type of spiritual essence which exists within the components of the physical world. The more one is prone to subscribe to this view of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, that certain things inhere in certain physical objects more than they do in other physical objects. So there's a certain kind of spiritual essence that inheres within the Jew, more so than it inheres within the non-Jew. And despite the best efforts of the convert is unable to achieve that sort of innate essence that is within the genetic material of the Jew. How we explain this any more than I just suggested, I don't know. But I will tell you that there's the mystical tradition stems from this doctrine of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, and we're going to see more and more of this as well. So therefore, he says, converts can accomplish their purpose, and this is in subparagraph number 3, by accepting the word of God from the prophets and becoming themselves wise and saintly, but they themselves cannot be prophets. And as I've mentioned last week, and I need to underscore it again, today this is largely a non sequitur. Because how many Jews do you know who are prophets? The Gemara says from the time that the temple was destroyed, prophecy was taken away from sane people and given to children and insane people. So if you ever encounter someone who professes prophecy, you should run the other way and check your pockets, because that person is not mentally stable. Because there is no longer prophecy abounding today. So it's largely a non sequitur. Therefore, Jews and Jews born as Jews and converts occupy the same station within the Jewish community today. There is no difference, there is no practical difference between the two today. It's important to know that even according to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, and it's very important to underscore that point, especially when there are so many prejudices against converts in the world today. When we talk in the world of Shiduchim, we know that there are some people who will say, no, I'm not going to make a shidduch with a family where there's a conversion in the family. And it's very important to dafka go against that kind of prejudice, because as the Rambam writes in another epistle, he says that there was a rabbi that was a contemporary of the Rambam who had said something critical of a convert of the time. And the Rambam says, I don't understand how that rabbi could have said what he said, when after all the Torah writes 37 times that you have a special mitzvah of loving the convert and of treating the convert with extra sensitivity and extra care. So how could someone even dare to write anything which would insinuate some kind of lower status to the convert if the Torah requires us to be sensitive and to elevate the convert within our community? And so therefore, despite what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes, as far as the difference of the abilities, the innate abilities within the convert and the natural-born Jew, we have to be extremely sensitive to not allow any of this doctrine to creep into our attitudes towards converts in the modern world. Now, I also want to point out to you that even within the mystical tradition, there is a beautiful statement that is made about converts. I don't claim to fully understand what the Zohar means, but I thought it was very important, especially in the backdrop of what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says, and to examine exactly how the Zohar approaches what a convert is. Because as I mentioned, the traditional, our mystical tradition, including the Zohar, stems from the same worldview as Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Even with that, even with the Zohar's acknowledgement that there is an inherent difference between the souls of converts and the souls of natural-born Jews, the Zohar actually says something quite beautiful about where the soul of a convert comes from. There are two passages in the Zohar that we'll try to read inside, I do not claim to have expertise in the Zohar, but enough that I can just translate it, okay? The first one is from Zohar Parshas Mishpatim, and that's the first text on this little piece of paper that you have. Okay? The Zohar in Parshas Mishpatim says, Im acheres yikachlo. It's going on a pasuk that says that if a man marries another wife, he has to provide her with all of that she's entitled to as a Jewish woman. And on that, many times the Zohar has a totally different reading of the natural, of the normal pshat and the simple understanding of the pasuk. And the Zohar says, "Kalma gilgulin atikin hacham, delo isgalun ad haidna." There are many, many secrets of old that have not been revealed until this very day that the Zohar is being written. V'kulhu kishot kidekayeos. And every statement that you will find is true from this Zoharic literature. And it is very important to never deviate a hair's breadth from the truth. And he says, at the very outset, says the Zohar, we have to make the following statement, and that is, Nishmasin digiurin. Kulhu parchan migav ginsa de'eden ba'orech sasim, that the souls of converts all fly, it's literally what it means, they all fly from or emanate from the Garden of Eden in a very secret fashion. All of the souls of converts have their origin in the Garden of Eden. Now, here, the Zohar is very cryptic about where and what happens to these souls and how these souls originate. But that's where the souls of converts come from the Garden of Eden. We take a look now at the next passage of the Zohar. This is from Parsha Shlach. Please don't assume that you'll become an expert in the Zohar by just reading these two short snippets. But the Zohar writes in a very difficult Aramaic. It's a unique form of Aramaic that is not found in any other Aramaic text. And it's difficult many times to understand exactly what the Zohar means, but we'll try to translate it as best as we can. Uh-huh. And the Zohar says, Kad misdabika nishmasin da im da, that when the souls of the righteous conjoin together. Now what the Zohar is telling us is that not only do human beings connect with each other in this world as a husband and a wife, but even the disembodied souls can procreate by joining together in the Garden of Eden. And the Zohar therefore says, Avdi Ibn, souls which conjoin together in the Garden of Eden, create offspring, V'nafki Nahorin Minayhu, V'is Avdi Shragin. And light emanates from the conjoined souls, and they create flames. V'inu Nishmasin L'giyurin, D'misgayurin. These flames that are the product of the procreation of conjoined souls in the Garden of Eden actually turn out to be the souls of people who convert to Judaism. And what the Zohar is describing is that even though God created the souls of Jews perhaps at the time of creation, when a person chooses to convert, where does that person's soul come from? It comes from the procreation of the righteous in the Garden of Eden who create children, spiritual children. And that's the souls of converts who are the product of that procreation in the Garden of Eden. The Cholhani Ailin Leheichal Echada, all of the souls of the converts go into a special repository, the Kad Misgayra Girura Chada Parcha Mehahu Heichala Nishmasa V'alas Toch Techos Gadvaha Deshchinta. When a person converts to Judaism, that soul, that created soul from that act of procreation in the garden, leaves that special repository and flies or travels under the wings of the divine presence. V'nashkasla, and God, or the divine presence, the Shechina, kisses that little neshama, that was created in the Garden of Eden, began de'ihu iba de'tzadikaiha, because after all, God loves that little neshama because it was created from the righteous in the garden. U'mishadras lo legav hahu giyura v'shara asbe, and God then takes that neshama and thrusts it into the body of a convert, and that's where it rests. And at that moment, I guess at the time of going to the mikveh, the person emerges from the mikveh and has acquired that soul that God has placed into the individual, and that's at that moment where the person is called Ger Tzedek, a righteous convert. Behind Raza, and that's the mystical secret, which is behind the pasuk Dichsiv, it says in Proverbs, Peri Tzadik Eitz Chayim, that the offspring, the fruit of the righteous, is a tree of life. So the Zohar says, what is the real meaning of those words? The fruit of a tzaddik is a tree of life. Ma ilana dechaye apik nishmasin, that just like a tree of life produces souls, ov hachi tzaddik ibadile avit nishmasin. So to a tzaddik can produce offspring even in the tzaddik's disembodied state. So a tzaddik leaves the world after 120 years. His neshama goes up to the Garden of Eden, and that tzaddik meets up with its spiritual counterpart and continues to procreate in the Garden of Eden. And from that union comes the souls of gerim, of the souls of converts. Rav Masivta Amar, Rav Masivta, one of the rabbis, he says, Kisiv, it says in Parshas Lech Lecha, Vatihi Sarai Akara, Ein La Valad, that Sarai, Avraham's wife, was barren. She had no children. So the Zohar asks the obvious question. Mimai Da'omar Vatihi Sarai Akara, Les Ana Yodea De Les La Valad? If this, the first part of the verse says that she was barren, doesn't that already state the obvious that she had no children? How can you say that someone is barren? Why do you have to then state that she didn't have children? Obviously, if she's barren, she has no children. So what's the meaning of the second part of the pasuk? Mai ein la valad, elahachi amar Rav Masivta. But Rav Masivta explained it thusly. Vlad lo havas molada, avol nishmasin havas molada. That Sarah did not give birth to physical children. That's what the pasuk means, that she didn't have children. But she did give birth to spiritual children. The istakusa, the tiavusa, the inun train, zakoyin, havamolidi nishmasim legiure. That Avraham and Sarah, every time they lived as husband and wife, they accomplished the very same thing that the neshamas of tzaddikim accomplish in the Garden of Eden. That even though they were barren for all those years, every time they were together, they created the neshamas of tzaddikim, future converts. Right? And therefore, that's why the tradition is that when a person converts to Judaism, they're known as the son or daughter of Avraham Avinu. Because in essence, what the Zohar is telling us is that the procreation of Avram and Sarah during those years when Sarah was barren was not for naught, but it was rather to produce the souls of future converts. So either when a person converts, either they are quite literally possessing the soul of Avram and Sarah, or they possess the soul of other tzaddikim who procreated in the Garden of Eden, or maybe it's a combination of both, I don't know. Adkan. We'll leave the Zohar at this point, because today is not an exercise in studying Zohar, but I just thought that you would find this to be quite interesting, is that even according to our mystical tradition, despite the fact that there is an inherent difference between a natural-born Jew and a convert, but yet Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi would not disagree with the depiction of the Zohar. There is something quite lofty and quite holy about the soul of a convert, but it does come from a different source. It comes from the procreation that takes place in the Garden of Eden. Are there any questions on this Zohar? Yes.
At what point did the Jewish people sort of not want to accept a non-Jewish soul? Like this was written in the 15th century?
The Zohar is, in its current incarnation, is from the 14th century.
Okay, the 14th century. So why are there so many Jews opposed to their children marrying non-Jews? If this is...
There is a stigma because, you know, if my son marries a girl who converted to Judaism, then who are my mechutanim? Who are my in-laws? There are challenges that are involved because her family will be celebrating Christmas while we're doing Hanukkah, and it's a challenge and it becomes a difficulty and so forth, and it's two different cultures, and perhaps some people feel that there may even be some kind of inherent inferiority. I mean, look, this story goes back well before the 13th century. You know the story of Ploni Almoni in the Book of Ruth. He didn't want to marry Ruth because he felt that there was something tainted within Ruth. One way of looking at the story is because he thought that because she was a Moabite, that she was inherently tainted. But you could also understand it as saying that no, he didn't want to marry a convert. He felt that, you know, there was something substandard to a convert. And that's why the Rambam speaks so strongly against those people who would make those suggestions. The Torah says, Va'ahavtem es hager, 37 times in the Torah, you shall love the convert. So what does that mean, you have to love the convert? You have to embrace them, accept them into your family, make them one with the Jewish people. And so therefore, no one has a right to make these differentiations. So we can speak about them on a theological level. We can speak about these distinctions that may exist on a metaphysical level. But on a communal level, on a practical level, we're not permitted to make any of these distinctions. And that's why we have to be very careful when studying these kinds of texts.
Was there ever, I remember reading something where there was, when the times were good for the Jewish people, they didn't accept converts.
The Gemara says that when the Mashiach comes, we will no longer accept converts. And that was also true, according to one opinion, during the reign of King Solomon. Because there was a suspicion that people only wanted to convert because it was popular, it was hip to be a Jew. Right? You know, there's like a thing, you know, like in the 60s, it was very hip to be to convert to Judaism. So there were people that were converting. You know, so that's why you have to be, that's why we have to be very discriminating in how we accept converts and making sure that the person is doing it for the for pure intentions and not for some ulterior motive. But that, and that's the reason why when things are riding high for the Jewish people, you don't accept converts, because we suspect that it may be for ulterior motives. Anything else? Let's go on. Okay, the next discussion is about the afterlife, the rewards of the afterlife, and why, an answer to the question as why it seems that other religions have a richer tradition about the afterlife than we do in Jewish literature. And I think that it's worthwhile for us to hold off on this discussion until next week. It's another topic, so we'll end at the bottom of page 136. Okay.